Hello and welcome to episode 155 of The Dive Down. Happy New Year as well. We're a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the latest decks, trends, and strategies for the casual spike in 2022 and beyond. My name is Stanislav here in Chicago, and with me on the line from Denver, Colorado, it's the one and only Shane Beeps. Shane, Happy New Year.
Oh my gosh, Happy New Year to you, Stan. Happy New Year to you, unnamed third host to be determined, and all the listeners, all the citizens of the Dive Down Nation out there, Happy New Year. It's good to be back. We took 1 week off, and it feels like I've been on vacation for a month.
Yeah.
It's nice. I feel refreshed. It's been a nice time off work. I can't believe how dead work was. Man, it's just glorious. Can't wait to retire.
I can't wait for you to retire, too, so I can stop hearing about it.
Only like 20 more years.
Until he can become an actual old person instead of just a metaphorical old person or whatever it is. Shane needs to go to the beach that makes you old. Is this the podcast that makes you old?
Stan's aging before our eyes.
Guys, I looked at a clip of myself from January of 2021 a little bit ago, and let me tell you, this beard was actually a lot less gray one slim year ago.
Really? Oh,
wow. Man. And this, my eyebrows are going gray now too, and they were totally brown before. So I don't know. I'm trying to jazz it up a little bit in 2022. You know what I mean?
Who's talking, Shane? Who is that?
Hi, it's me, your other podcast host, Post Malone.
Posty. What's up,
my dude, Posty?
You know, you can just get some more face tattoos to cover up that gray.
Yeah. I heard that was his strategy too.
Yeah. Dave. We're joking. It's not Posty. It's Dave.
Dave, what are you wearing?
It's me, the Godfather. Well, you know, new year, I'm bringing some new energy into it. I did want to only wear shirts from now on that it seems like Post Malone might wear. So this is my first one. What do you think of this shirt?
Is it sweat wicking?
It's not a workout shirt. No, it's got a collar. It's a button down. It's a dress shirt. And it's a dress shirt. It's a white dress shirt for the listeners.
I think it kind of rules. Is it short or long sleeve?
Oh, it's short sleeve.
Hell yeah.
For the listeners, since this is an audio medium and not a video medium, I am wearing a white dress shirt with black planeswalker symbols all over it, which I received as a present from someone in my family who doesn't love me very much, I guess. But
I think it's kind of awesome. It fits. It looks like it fits.
It's a little too big.
Okay. Well, then try it on high.
Yeah.
See, try
it on high. I don't know. What do you think? You're going to send it back, Stan? Or do you think you could pull this off? This look. This Post Malone shirt.
That's just not the type of shirt I would ever wear.
Not enough weird red pockets.
I don't like button downs that have like little designs on them. Little graphics. You know what I mean? Oh, like, man, that is a style.
Get out of here.
Doesn't work for me. On me.
I don't think it looks great on me either, to be honest. It looks good on me from the neck up. I think this is my new podcasting shirt, because from the neck down, it looks like I'm a potato covered in forks.
Stand up. Let me see your body.
No. We'll do that after we're off stream.
Let's look upon your body, Dave.
Turn around for me. Dance for me.
Let's check that fit. It's a fit check. Isn't that what people use that phrase?
Oh, yeah. Fit check.
Yeah.
Fit check. Okay.
Yeah.
This shirt fits okay.
I only wear sweat wicking shirts now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always in athleisure.
This guy wakes.
You do work for a performance company now, so athletic performance company. So
on this week's show, we set out our sights on the new year, document our goals and plans for 2022 as both players and friends and podcasters and rivals and apparently clothing connoisseurs. In Dave's case. Then we're going to dole out some expert advice to listeners like you who have submitted their New Year's goals for us to chew on. We're also going to kick off the show with a breakdown. We're going to do a quick December monthly report. We got a pivot table or several. And a quick look at some of the modern challenges from this weekend. But first, we got some housekeeping. No new patrons, no increased tiers, and no new reviews.
Man.
Which is fine.
Yeah,
as we're gonna head into that new year, let's get that momentum rolling. I can't wait for some new reviews and some new citizens of the nation.
You know, people taking got other things going on in the holidays. That it's just fine.
A-okay.
Yeah, but maybe you got a really big generous gift from grandma, and you want to give out some cash. You want to dole it out to your favorite content creators. You can find us on Patreon over at patreon.com/thedivedown. You can also support us while playing Magic with Mana Traders.
For sure. ManaTraders.com. We have a new sign-up code. It's the Dive Down 2022. You thought 2021 might never end, but it did. And so did our code. 15% off your first 2 months of ManaTrader's service. You sign up code TheDiveDown2022. That's the year in which we are in. Stan, I wanted to go back to the Patreon because it's important to mention a few things. One, deck boxes are in production. Number two, lots of awesome stuff that you get if you're not familiar with the Patreon and the benefits that you get from it. You get swag, you get stickers, you get custom tokens with art from a professional comic book artist, Benjamin Dewey. You get cool pins that Dave designed. You get play mats at certain tiers. You get early access to the episode at the $5 tier. You get access to our show notes at the $3 tier. I get immediate access to the definitively discreet Dive Down Discord for as little as $1 a week. And that's an awesome community there.
Don't forget the playmat. Get playmats. And Stan, I think you have some news about playmats, right?
Guys, hold on. I have to lift with my legs. Mm. What am I holding?
I don't know. It looks like it's straining you, though.
It's a big box of playmats.
Ah.
Should we do an audio unboxing?
No.
Okay.
It's an audio medium.
Yeah, we got a ton of playmats. Maybe I'll do a shipment this month. I will do a shipment this month. No maybes.
Yeah, we probably have some people we owe playmats to. They have been in production delays, much like many other things. And so now that Stan has those, we'll be getting some out.
As a word of caution, my last shipment of playmats included several international recipients, and some of those came back to me because apparently the U.S. Postal Service is having a hard time delivering to certain countries due to COVID. So everyone who's owed a playmat internationally or in the Americas, you will get it, even if that means I have to try a couple times and wait for, you know, certain COVID restrictions to let...
Or we'll just fly out.
Yeah.
Just expense that, man.
Yeah, I'm going to expense it. Like,
submit the receipts. Yeah, you need to go to Bucharest to deliver a playmat. It is what it is.
Wait, am I not supposed to use the company card on every purchase that I make forever?
I'm an employee of the Dive Down.
So yeah, so if you're in the United States, you'll get... And you're owed a playmat, I'll do a shipment this month. If you're abroad, I will also do a shipment this month, but I just can't guarantee it'll actually reach you in time or soon just because we are having some issues with that stateside.
Speaking of owed a playmat, Dave, do you want to talk about Barrister and Man?
I do want to talk about Barrister Man. So we do want to announce that we have a new partnership starting up this year with a company that maybe some of you are familiar with from other Magic podcasts that have had them as sponsor in the past. Barrister and Man is a grooming care products company. I suppose that's what we would say. The main thing that we want to do is talk really quick about the fact that we decided that we wanted to do this because Will, the founder of Barrister and Man, is actually a member of the Dive Down Nation and likes to Titan. So I know what people think about that, but his company is really good, I promise, even if his deck choice is suspect.
I mean, he's also been into the Rakdos mid-range stuff. We were talking about that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's true. So that's redeemable for sure. So you should check out their products. It's Barrister and Man, spelled with two N's, M-A-N-N.
We'll have a link in the show notes, of course. We've been using some of their products.
Oh, yeah. That's
Will
the important
very
thing.
Generously sent us some samples based on our own personal preferences, as well as some additional surprises. And I've been doing some facial grooming and beard care for literally the first time in my life.
Yeah, it's wild. I've had a beard for 16 odd years now. And honestly, I really have kind of avoided beard oils. I one of the reasons that I actually am hyped about this partnership with Barrister and Man is that I do like wet shaving and shaving soaps and fragrances and things like that, all of which Barrister and Man make. And I was very hyped to get these, especially after I opened them up, and the packaging is awesome and the design is really cool and the fragrances are awesome. And I was more impressed than I thought I was going to be. No offense, Will. I was really, really hyped to use the products and have the shaving soap be honestly the best shaving soap I've used. And I've used quite a few of them over the years because, you know, I don't shave my face, but I do shave my neck. I shave my cheeks, things like that. Keep that beard line clean. The beard oil is dope. It's good for your skin. Like, your skin gets weird under there. It gets kind of dry, but like it's good for the hair. It's good for your skin. I got everything in Seville, which is their best-selling package. It's the best-selling, fragrance. And I got the shave soap, the beard oil, and the literal, like, eau de toilette, the fragrance. And it's kind of awesome to have all three of them be the same because I use all of them and then they all smell the same. I don't have to worry about stuff like not mixing. It's just like I can use all the same stuff and it all smells awesome. And my wife's like, hey, that smells really good. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. It smells dope. So I think Will's secret plan was that I was going to buy more because I'm already like messaging him like, what else should I get? Like I'm gonna give you more money in return for this, for the product. How are you guys liking it?
Yeah, I've been, you know, I don't shave much either. I have a big beard. I also don't really maintain my lines all that well, but I've been using the beard oil and the soap, the hand soap and body soap, things like that. I also have it in Seville. It's a great product. Like Shane said, you know, the packaging is really nice. It's just kind of like a really something that you feel happy, or I feel happy to just have around when I'm getting ready in the morning. It just feels like a really nice thing to use. And so I've been really enjoying the beard oil myself and helping that skin out under my beard.
I have a similar story to Shane's in that I also have basically had a beard for more than 10 years now, maybe 12 or so. And I do line up my neck and cheeks. I've never been one to have a neck beard for comfort reasons mostly. So the difference with me though is whenever I would like shave my neck or beard, I wouldn't even use shaving cream. I would just use a raw razor after a shower. Monster. And I would just line it up and it was always fine. And one of the things that I personally really like about this new Barrister and Man routine is that it actually gives me a little bit of a ritual because he sent me, I got the brush, the shaving brush. I got lavender shaving soap and lavender beard oil and just doing a little extra pampering to myself with the sweet smell of lavender. It's not too strong. It's kind of neutral and flowery. My wife is very scent sensitive, so I have to be kind of careful about the fragrances that I use so as to not, you know, make her leave me. Because she said, Stan, if you smell bad, I'm out of here.
She's like, it's either the Dracar or me.
That's right.
No Cool Wave.
She's like, Stan, you're only allowed to use Axe chocolate. But I introduced this lavender Barrister & Man product and she loves it and I love it. And I get the best shave ever. And it's really fun. And the beard oil is nice too. I actually, after I put it in my beard, whatever's left in my hands, I just run it through my hair. So now I just kind of smell like this like nice little soft lavender friend.
Kind of like Herbes de Provence, Stan. So look, we won't talk about it for like 4 minutes every time, every week, but we're going to be talking about them over the next couple of weeks. Thanks for coming along with us on this journey, Barrister Man. And, you know, everybody else, thanks for listening here. And then I know that there's a code. Shane, what's the code?
Yeah, it is 15% off your first order. And the code is the Dive Down 2022. All one word.
There you go.
So yeah, just consistency. So yeah, thanks for listening to us. Thanks, Will, for working with us at this. I know that if you want to use something, use that code. It saves you money. It lets Will know that you came through us, and hopefully we can keep our partnership going.
Yeah, and they got lots of stuff other than, you know, if you happen to be someone who doesn't shave but likes fragrances, like it sounds like we've been talking about, go check it out too. Okay.
Into the breakdown.
So this week for the breakdown, it's been a minute since we took last week off, since we've talked about any of the modern meta right now. And we're starting off something new this year, right? Stan, you kind of talked about on the last episode that you were going to try to do this on a monthly basis. Are you thinking about trying to keep it going here?
I want to try to keep it going. And I'm a big fan of creating momentum whenever I set out a new long-term goal. So starting in January, we're going to look back on December now that we have all of the December MTGO tournament data. For those of you who listened to our previous episode with Spike, basically what I did there where I took every modern challenge over the course of 2021, I did this for just December where I took all the modern challenges as well as the modern super qualifier that happened last month. And what I did is I pulled the top 8 deck lists, the top deck, top card, top creatures, and top spells from the metagame breakdown that's also on MTG Goldfish, plugged all those bad boys and girls into an Excel spreadsheet, spat out some pivot tables so that we actually have some empirical data on what were the most popular strategies in competitive modern through the month of December. Right. So let's start with the top decks overall among the top 32s. Tied. 4 decks appeared 9 times, and those were Murktide Regent, Hammer Time, Death Shadow, and 4 Color Blink.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Death Shadow, huge comeback. Blink, huge rise. Hammer Time and Murktide hanging out where they have been, top of the meta.
Yeah. Yeah. Really close behind with 8 copies was Yawgmoth.
Wow.
Which I'll admit, I was a little surprised by how popular Yawgmoth was. And I wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that Demonic Tutors always runs out Yawgmoth and other players as well at this point. But Tutors is always playing Yawgmoth in the weekend challenges and always doing fairly well with them.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Yawgmoth is more than, you know, decks like Footfalls and Burn and Azorius Control and Jund Saga. It's just like, yep, it's in the top tiers of Modern right now, I think, even more than just Demonic Tutors.
Yeah. Footfalls, Burn, and Control were close behind, 7 copies apiece there. Jund, Mill, Blue Living End, and Amulet Titan were kind of coming up the rear with 6 or 5 copies apiece.
So I have one more to throw on your list here that is hiding below the surface, at least on the tables that we have right here.
I see you highlighting it in the spreadsheet, I think.
I am, because we have it listed as several different things here. We have Prowess coming back under 3 different titles, maybe on Goldfish, Obosh Aggro, Obosh Prowess, and Prowess itself with 7 total copies between all of those archetypes. They're very close to the same deck, except for there's kind of a debate going on in that deck right now as to whether it's better to run Luris or Obosh as your companion. But there's definitely been some steam there from a number of different people. Hasn't won any events, but did come in as a finalist 1 week and has a couple of top 8s. So far out of the tournament sample that Stan looked at. So, you know, if you want to look at the decks that are up around the same bracket as Burn, people are trying to figure out how to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. So if we look at top cards, once again, Expressive Iteration, the most popular card in Modern. 398 copies appeared in December challenges and the Super Qualifier. Wow.
Remember how Lightning Bolt was kind of number one until it was replaced by Iteration? In December, it is the 6th most powerful, popular card. That's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that red cards weren't popular, because if you look at this list, it's Expressive Iteration. Mishra's Bauble had 1 less copy than Expressive Iteration in this sample, 398 to 397. Then Ragavan with 392 copies. So really all 3 of those together at the top. And then Unholy Heat, Dragon's Rage Channeler, and Lightning Bolt all had more than 300 copies appearing in the tournaments that Stan looked at.
Yeah, I think part of that has to do with this package that we just listed off of Iteration, Bauble, Ragavan, Unholy Heat, Channeler, Lightning Bolt. They're appearing in multiple decks as a little body of cards. We see them in Grixis Shadow. We see them in Murktide Regent. There's probably other strategies here and there that are using them as
Prowess.
Well. Yeah, certain builds of Prowess that don't use Obosh.
Oh, no, those are in...
Although, is Prowess playing Iteration?
Those are in either one. Just Bauble is not in the ones with Obosh, of course, but all the one drops are.
Yeah. So there we go. Ragavan, of course, most popular creature, followed by Dragon's Rage Channeler. And then Esper Sentinel. And then if we look at actual top spells, you know, Iteration and Bauble, of course, are the most popular, followed by Unholy Heat, and then Lightning Bolt. And the 5th most popular is Prismatic Ending. I will say, based on the challenge results we saw this weekend, which we're going to get into in a moment, I feel like Prismatic Ending might start to actually grow in popularity in January, and we might maybe see it surpass Lightning Bolt.
Wow, that would be really something.
My goodness.
Time will tell. Only 2 Planeswalkers are really among the top cards, and those are Teferi and Renin 6. Maybe not surprising, but Jace and Big Teferi also kind of hanging out still periodically. And of course, Tron is full of Planeswalkers, but those didn't really make the cut. Whereas Renin 6 and Teferi, I think, are, you know, they're in a ton of decks, and they're very important pieces in a ton of decks where they're frequently appearing as 3, if not 4 ofs.
And they cost 2 and 3 mana.
That helps.
It's cheap. It's cheap. Well, you know, Karn costs 3 mana too.
Exactly. Let's talk about the top 8s, Stan. What was the, do you want to go through the meta of what kind of converted the most from the 32 to top 8s?
Yeah, so the highest performing deck here with 14 copies is Grixis Shadow. 14 copies, like I said. Followed by Hammer Time with 11 copies, and then Murktide and Blink with 7 copies apiece. This looks very close to our actual top decks as well.
Yeah, it's almost the same order, just a couple of the top ones got higher than the others.
Yeah, Yawgmoth and Azorius and Jund are close behind. If we look among the finalists, so whoever came in first or second in these tournaments, Hammer Time and Grixis Shadow both reached the finals four times apiece. And then Murktide and Titan and Blink did it twice each. And then likewise, if we look at actual winners of these tournaments, Grixis Shadow was the most tournament-winning deck with three tournament wins. Two of those, I believe, were Soulstrong.
Yeah.
Although Soulstrong, his streak may have been in November.
No, that was December. That was early December. I think it was the first, it was like the 10th or something like that.
Wait, I think all three of them are Soulstrong because the super qualifier, he may have won as well.
Whoa.
If I remember correctly. But then Hammer Time won a couple. Blink also won two. And then Yawgmoth and Footfalls each won a tournament. I will say, I was a little surprised that Murktide didn't win anything. It appeared in the finals twice. But this deck, it's super popular. It's often hanging out in the top eights. But I feel like it's having a hard time closing lately. And it's kind of just like this mainstay rather than this like obvious format threat. Perhaps because it has such a hard time against, you know, some of these Teferi decks in particular.
Yeah. I feel like it's tough to put too much stock into the winners versus the top eights. You know what I mean? Like, I think the top eights is where you can kind of still look at it and be like, okay, this is interesting. There's trends here and things. There's so much luck in who finishes the top eight with the finals. And, you know, regularly people on Moto scoop to each other for different reasons and things like that in the top eights as well. It doesn't get publicized a ton, but it does happen. And so I think it's interesting to note what actually won the tournaments. But I take a little bit more of the trends from the conversions from the 32 meta into the top eight meta than anything else. And the top cards, I think, is really fascinating when you to see that detail as well.
The fact that Soulstrong keeps winning with Shadow, though, makes you think that there's also something to be said about being able to win tournaments over and over. That
yes,
you can't just give it all to luck and variance too.
Right.
He also Soulstrong won today's Modern Challenge.
Right. Yep.
The Sunday. So
yeah. So it is a bit of a mix for sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything too surprising on this meta list. It feels like a really good kind of temperature check. It's similar to, I feel like, the decks we talked about with Spike a couple of weeks ago. I guess the main one that's a little bit of a surprise to me is Yawgmoth being so high again right now as something that people are really, really into again and seem to be bringing to these kind of high-end tournaments on Moto. Shane, any general thoughts on this?
I agree with you, right? Which is like, I think, feel like we just had a conversation on the Discord the other week about how Hammer doesn't win as much as some other decks for its representation. But yeah, top eight is meaningful. You know, it's not like people looked at, you know, Pro Tour top eights and GP top eights. They're not like, oh, you're not in the Hall of Fame because you didn't win three Pro Tours or something like that. It's just kind of the name of the game when you reach the top eight there. But in terms of this, I think that it's an interesting way for the year to end. I think we'll see some of these trends continuing as we talk about these challenges, the first challenges of the year. You guys ready to get into those? Thanks for this pivot, Stan. Good work.
It was really my pleasure.
So let's head into the challenge. We have Saturday. We have full top 32 information, and then we have top eight from Sunday we can breeze through. So starting with Saturday, of course, thanks to Bamzing. Bamzing in 2022, we all rely on you for our Sunday recordings. We had 186 players, and our top 32 metagame looked like seven copies of various flavors of Hammer, five Grixis Shadow, two Bring the Light Scapeshift, a couple Azorius Control, a couple four-color Blink decks, a couple Living End, and then a bunch of one-offs. Some of them in terms of our repeat offenders, but a lot of honorable mentions. Things like Tron and Infect and a Naya Ponza list with Storm Breath Dragon, which I guess you want against Solitude, and maybe Prismatic Ending if they're casting it for 5 mana, and splashing white for Prismatic Ending, of course. There's a Glimpse of Tomorrow deck. There's a 4-color Enigmatic Incarnation deck. There's a Dredge, multicolor Dredge deck. So why not? But what's interesting here, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, I think, you notice we didn't say Murktide, Jund, Footfalls, Prowess. What's interesting here, though, is do you think we're ready at this point? I think based on the December information and what we're seeing here, Grixis Shadow. This is, man, the ebb and flow of Shadow and Modern is like the thing that makes me feel like I never have a grasp on what actually shapes metagame. Like it's, you know, we used to be able to say something like, well, when a Stubborn Denial is good, then Grixis Death Shadow is good. But I feel like Grixis Shadow now is just sort of like You know, it's just it's a Luris pile with dress down.
It's kind of like just the other Jund deck, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it also has Drown in the Lock, of course, so it does have main board counter spells a little bit more often than old. I mean, old Grixis, of course, had Stubborn Denial, as Shane mentioned, which was about something that you could use to defend your threats. It's a much more proactive deck, I think, now than it used to be in a lot of ways, because it runs Ragavan, it runs Death Rage Channel, or Dragon's Rage Channel most often. Drown the Lock is good as removal or as a counterspell. So I think that the deck is really quite different from what we used to think that it was. And it's a little Jundy, but it also has that kind of counterspell. So it doesn't quite grind as... I don't feel like it grinds as much as it used to. I feel like it's pretty aggressive card selection kind of game, as opposed to what we're used to from Grixis.
I mean, that sounds like... I mean, honestly, Dave, what you're saying sounds like the old Grixis Death Shadow. Turbo Xerox, peeling through your deck, using a ton of blue cantrips, getting your card selection, counterspelling when you needed to.
You just have more threats and better threats in this deck than you used to lower. You're not as all-in on Shadow being there to close games out because of Ragavan and DRC.
I mean, your second Shadow is not a Gurmag Angler.
Yeah, I mean, and Gurmag Angler was great, right? But it these threats always cost one mana. You had to do setup to get Gurmag Angler to be good. Later on, when people were trying to make Scourge of the Skyclaves a thing, you know, that was sort of like, okay, well, what if we have eight Shadows in our deck? You know, that can that be a thing as well? And, you know, it's disruptive with dress down. It's got lower curve. I think all those things are really good. It's just a good Luris deck, I think, is part of it too.
And that's how it grinds.
Yeah.
You kind of suggested that it's not as grindy of a deck. I think because of Luris and Bauble in particular, it can be a very grindy deck. And I would even add Ragavan to that mix. You know, sometimes being able to just play your opponent's cards, especially when there's a very good chance your opponents are also playing Expressive Iteration and Mishra's Bauble, you know, you're going to cast them with or without your treasure tokens. I think the other thing that's interesting about today's Shadow deck is that it's not as vulnerable to Graveyard Hate because it's not playing, you know, Gurmag Angler cards, Delve cards, but also without the Street Wraiths, your Shadows aren't going to be like 7/7s and 8/8s quite as often. You're more frequently beating down with 4s and 5s and 6s. So you have a little bit more of a buffer against some of the other super aggro decks like Burn or Prowess that might otherwise punish you for going really low and playing chicken with your life total.
Yeah. But the one thing I will say is that Shadow being big in the meta right now is a big incentive for decks that play Blood Moon main to be doing well as well, because I think that this version of Shadow is actually pretty vulnerable to Blood Moon, maybe a little bit more even than it used to be. You can use Ragavan to get out of some tight spots with that, but you know, they still are pretty susceptible to getting just kind of Blood Mooned out. I think that a lot of the lists don't even run basic island anymore at this
Correct.
Point. They only run a basic mountain and a basic swamp, which is kind of like, okay.
Yeah, there's only, I think, two cards that even require blue. It's Drown in the Lock
and Expressive
Dress Down.
And Expressive Iteration.
And Expressive Iteration.
So it's actually got a lot of blue pips in it, which is what made me surprised about the way that people are kind of going with the lists. But
I also, it occurs to me that we don't have anything as aggro disruptive like Spirits or Humans at the top of the meta, which is something that will frequently punish Shadow style decks that go super wide. And maybe that's because we have Unholy Heat, and this one is playing Unholy Heat and Bolt and probably some other removal as well.
Yeah, I mean, this deck just feels so different now because I don't think it has to be like a protect the royalty type strategy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, like Dave said, like, just the suite of threats is just so much better now, where it's like you can sort of just end up sticking like a weird late game Shadow and like just, you know, dress down it and it gets through and then you win, as opposed to like being like, I have to play one of my eight threats and hope they survive to like try to actually push through damage on this. Or like, I'm winning with Snapcaster Beats at the end of the game. And like, this, I don't think this has to do anything like that anymore.
Yeah, and even the cards that can be vulnerable to Graveyard Hate, like Kroxa and Dragon's Rage Channeler, they're still good potentially in the face of Graveyard Hate. Dress Down being a way to get a Kroxa down without having a graveyard full of cards, and Channeler just being able to filter your deck with every non-creature spell that you cast also gives it a ton of utility, even if it remains a 1/1 through the course of the game. So you're just less vulnerable to hate cards in general, with the exception of maybe Blood Moon.
But it's a good deck. I mean, I'm somewhat glad to see whenever Shadow comes back. You know, I spent some time trying to get good at Shadow. I don't think that it's where I would go right now in the meta, just because I don't think I'm up to the task at the moment mentally. But it's clearly having a lot of success right now. And certainly, you know, Soulstrong, as an example of one pilot, is just destroying Magic Online with it right now. So,
all right, so let's head into this top eight, breeze through these, although I think there's enough interesting things happen that Breeze might be ambitious. We have Sokos 13 on the aforementioned Grixis Shadow featuring Lurrus. Three Death Shadow, not four, three. So
it's just more credence to the fact that you don't necessarily have to always have Shadow to be able to close out with the deck, but...
Second place, Wisnia on Azorius Mill. Yes, I said Azorius Mill. There's no Drawn in the Lock. There's no Surgical Extraction. Not Dimir. It's just blue. Splashing white. It's got all the high CMC blue mill spells combined with the eight crabs. It's got some white interaction like Prismatic Ending in the main, Portable Hole in the side, some more blue interaction like Remand and Repeal in the main deck as well. So, wild deck.
Yeah, the Remand here I think is interesting. Instead of playing Counterspell, maybe all you really need to do is just buy yourself a turn or two while digging for more of these mill cards is more critical than actually just a hard counter would be.
All right, third place, Freak Nightmare on Bring to Light Scapeshift.
This is a sexy deck. Can I read it off real quick?
Sure.
Four Teferi, three Renin Six, four Dryad, three Omnath, one Valky, of course.
You skipped a really important card. You skipped three Arboreal Grazier.
I don't think Grazier is that important here, but it is definitely a creature in the deck. Four Bring to Light, three Expressive Iteration. There it is again. Four Prismatic Ending. Hello, hello. Now we have Ending in Scapeshift and Mill, by the way. Kind of why I was saying earlier that I think Scapeshift might eventually outnumber the Lightning Bolts in Modern.
Wait, you mean Prismatic Ending in Mill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then there's Scapeshift here, there's a Supreme Verdict, and then it's got your sort of, it's got your Scapeshift land package here. So it's 28 lands, including four Valakut and a bunch of other things to make the deck go.
Yeah, so it still does like the all-in mountain thing, like old Scapeshift decks used to, but it doesn't necessarily need to have like some of those bad mountain dual lands like Cinderglade, because you now have Dryad of the Elysian Grove to smooth that out for you.
Yeah, interesting looking deck.
I like it. I don't know. I really like it.
Yeah,
it's like the easy version of Titan and a faster version of Blink rolled into one.
I mean, Bring to Light Scapeshift is I think a powerful shell. And I think it depends on being able to buy yourself enough time, or the metagame sort of being slow enough, or not having the particular like interaction points that are going to slow you down. We don't see a lot of, I think, sort of traditional counter spells in this top eight, or I think this top 32. We don't see a lot of Murktide here, so we don't see a lot of Azorius Control, so that's definitely helpful. It might just be right place, right time, but Bring to Light is a very powerful card, and if you know what you're doing with it, and you can buy yourself some time, then you're going to cast some cool spells.
Yeah, and don't forget, you don't have to win with Scapeshift in this deck. You have the option to go get it when you want to, but you can also win with Omnath. You can also win with a well-timed Supreme Verdict against the right deck, and then kind of go on to victory from there. So there are a couple of different angles that the deck can work with as well, but even if Scapeshift is kind of the plan A.
All right, then we go into a bunch of hammer decks. Fourth place, we've got X-Whale, Will Kruger on Mono White Hammer. If it's not broke, don't fix it. He's still doing his Singleton Ginger Brute main, a couple Core Outfitters main. Then we go into Young Toast on, this is Orzhov Hammer. Will was on Mono White. Young Toast on the Orzhov. Two Blacksmith's Skill in the main, which is a one mana white instant. It gives target permanent hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. And if it's an artifact creature, it gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Note that X-Whale also had these in the sideboard, and we also see it in the 14th place main deck and the sideboard of the 20th place deck. I will say, during some pre-Vegas testing, Citizen of the Nation Shark was telling me that he thought this was a card worth considering and worth running. So people are picking up on this. Maybe it's Blacksmith Skill time to shine. It's a cool card. It's efficient. So we'll see if we keep seeing it in these lists. I also note that these two hammer players had 2 to 3 defense grids in their sideboard. It's not new tech at all, but perhaps indicative of kind of its current utility or rising utility. And then up in sixth place, we have WR Zobusex on Celestia Hammer, with, of course, 4 Ancient Stirrings to kind of get to necessary pieces. We kind of talked about a deck like this a few weeks ago, so continuing its winning ways. However you want to build Hammer, it's going to win. Seventh place, Soulstrong, aforementioned, on Grixis Shadow. Eighth place, the Tunneling Cat. I know they are a trophy grinder, I believe, as well, on Azorius Control. Pretty normal looking list to me. What about you guys?
It almost looks like a list I was copy and pasted from 3 months ago. Back to Chalices, 2 Chalices in the main, 1 on the side. Very clean. I say that as not a backhanded compliment at all.
Respectful.
Yeah.
Quick things of note here in this top 32, only 4 decks with Solitude. 1 Azorius Control deck and 3 in various flavors of like Yorian 4-color blank / Enigmatic Incarnation decks. So I found that a little bit surprising, where Solitude, formerly one of the most played creatures, sometimes even the most played creatures and stuff like this, it's a little bit less popular right now. And yeah, overall, pretty wild challenge. I mean, some of the modern staples that we might consider aren't there, like Murktide Saga, Footfalls. Of course, we do have Cascade decks and Living End and a Glimpse of Tomorrow deck, but I think this is just kind of the first thing, the first challenges of 2022. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. And of course, Hammer, still okay.
Seems like it. All right, should we move on to the Sunday challenge?
Yeah, let's blow through this one really fast. We don't have a lot of deck lists. We just have a few Twitter posts. Thanks again, Bamzing. Soulstrong, Grixis Shadow, featuring Lurrus.
The winner.
Wins, first place, why not? Second place, Living End, Charlie QDS. Third place, a Azorius Urza deck from Marin Arias. Their Twitter has the whole list. It's an 80-card Yorian deck with like Thopter Sword, Stoneforge Mystic, Cultra Complete, Counterspells, Solitudes, Urza, Chalices. Why not play all these cards?
So I played against this deck, or a deck really, really close to this, a couple of days ago online, and I was not thrilled to lose to a Thopter Sword combo in at the end of 2021, I will say. So interesting to see it back, though. A lot of good cards in this deck.
You heard it here first.
Cards. A lot of good cards. I mean, I don't know if this is something I would pick up, but people start keeping an eye out for Metallic Rebuke is all I could say. If you have someone playing a bunch of stuff against you, because that card is easy to forget about.
What a card. Then we have this fourth place, Arun J. Singh, on a Is It Grinding Station Underworld Breach style deck. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's that artifact breachy combo.
Arun is one of the co-hosts of the Serum Visions podcast.
Yeah, Jiggy Wiggy.
So you can check that.
Yes. I knew that name. So congratulations, Jiggy. Then we've got Cracker Pack, fifth place, on Belcher, featuring Kahira. 4-color Yorian Blink, Manoa MTG. 7th place, Grixis Shadow, featuring Lurrus from Whiteside 24. And then we have 8th place, 4-color Omnath Control, featuring Yorian from RWN231. Is our Twitter handle. So congratulations to all y'all. Some interesting and awesome first challenges to look at, and I'm excited for what 2022 in Modern is going to be. You all ready to head on out of here? I think we've been here so long.
Before we get out of here, what's the next deck that you're going to queue up with on Modo or at a? Well, I don't know if anybody's going to LGS right now. What's the next Modern deck you're thinking about picking up, Stan? Where are you at right now?
I'm 2 matches into a league right now with 4-color blank.
How's that going?
I've timed out of both of those matches.
I knew that. I was just queuing you up there.
He's taking a break to do the podcast, and then he's going to go back and spend some more time timing out.
It was so frustrating because both matches I was winning, and then I lost the clock. The deck is really fun. I thought that it was not going to have this problem because it plays 4 Omnath, 4 Solitude, 4 Fury, and it's just like, I have beaters. Unlike a lot of other control decks that have to win with Celestial Colonnade, here I can just land a really powerful threat and take over.
Yeah, it's a flying beater.
And still, it takes forever. The problem is Eternal Witness. Doing all the cool Eternal Witness stuff, which is critical to the deck, takes so many clicks. So what I basically realized is that this is a deck that you have to play with a mouse. You can't play it with a trackpad. Not one of the...
You're like scrolling madly.
Yeah, you can't scroll madly. You got to clickety-clack. Use a gamer mouse.
Yeah.
Click program.
What's your APM, Stan?
Not high enough, dog. It's like two.
You got to tune up on League of Legends or Dota to be able to come back to this.
I don't know what those things are.
We're going to get into goals in the dive down.
What are your decks?
Yeah, that's okay. What I'm doing. So, okay. No, fitting with my goal.
Okay.
I'm going to focus on Hammer. And I'm likely going to focus on Modern White, Mono White Hammer. And I'm probably going to do like Kruger's List because one, I love Core Outfitter. And I probably will actually experiment with Blacksmith skill, perhaps in the main.
Hammer. Okay. I have been playing a bunch of Prowess lately, as I mentioned earlier. I did a few leagues. I think the deck is fine. I don't think I'm going to keep going on with it. My goal is to go back and start playing some more Titan, honestly. see where that adventure goes for a little bit.
Oh, man, Dave. Do you even own Cavern of Souls?
I own two. I don't own four.
Yeah, that's all you need. You need two or three.
Yeah, but
right?
You know what? The rest of the deck is cheap. But I'm not thinking about it in paper yet. But that's just the next thing I'm thinking about doing on Magic Online. I wanted to do it some more over break, but I just kept queuing in with the Ragavan deck. I like that monkey.
This is so sad. This is the moment where Stan and Dave really diverge and are no longer counterspellers.
Yeah, I just don't feel like every time I look at those decks, like I just am like, nah, I don't really want to play these right now. I don't want to do that. There's some chance I would fire up some Grixis Shadow, but yeah, I'm trying some other stuff. I got this new shirt. I want to have a new deck too.
New shirt, new you.
All right.
Well, new beard oil.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thanks for indulging me in that before we get into our broader goals. So we're going to do some of our goals. We're going to do some goals from some of our listeners in the section coming up after this. So please stay with us. All right. Well, for this episode, our first episode of 2022, we wanted to take a step. You know, it's a good time for reflection. Everybody reflects at the new year. And so we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking with each other, and also we reached out to people on Twitter, listeners, and members of our Discord to ask about goals for 2022. Some of the responses we got were Magic-related goals. Some of them were personal goals. Some of them were other things. We'll see where what we have time for. But what we did was we went through and organized the responses we had into a few broad categories. We're going to play some recordings from people so that they can we can hear people. We had people call into podandbox.com/thedivedown. If you ever want to leave us a voicemail, you can check it there. But they called in, gave us their notes, and there were a few themes that emerged. And so I think what we want to do is kind of maybe give some advice or perspective or where we're thinking about the goals that people contributed to us. And then also just kind of try to make it so that the needs of what one Magic player is thinking about going into next year can kind of be something that everybody can learn from going into next year.
This will be our first foray into being an advice column, essentially. And the way we see it is that one person's Magic or life goals and ambitions may not necessarily be unique to them and could hopefully resonate with lots of other listeners out there. So we're going to take these in, provide some feedback where we can, relate to it where we do, and hope that you might find some tips and best practices and maybe even some motivation to actually pursue these goals of your own. So Shane, as I understand it, you have a little red button with all of these audio messages synced up to it.
I do.
So the first goal that we have is coming from Brent W.
Hey, Dive Down, it's Brent. My 2022 goal is just play as tight as possible in every Magic setting that I play in to give myself the best chance to win. Sometimes I make some silly mistakes and I want to just play tighter. Thanks, and have a happy 2022.
Right on, Brent. Happy 2022 to you as well. I do want to shout Brent out. So Brent, as you might know, is the editor of MTG Rants with Ross and Tannen. And he and two of the other sort of like mods and members of the MTG Rants community actually did the year-end episode of MTG Rants, and I thought it was pretty darn good. So I would definitely suggest checking that out. Brent's not only a good editor, but good on mic as well. So great work, Brent, and great goal, I think, as well.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think that, you know, this is a pretty common goal, I think, for Magic players generally when they think about what they want to improve. I think if you are someone who is, you know, self-aware, you probably realize everybody makes mistakes when they're playing. There's all things that we can do to improve our technical play. I think there's different aspects of that. You know, we had other people contribute goals along the same lines. Aaron G sent us a note that said, I want to improve my in-person play. At the moment, I struggle with in-person play and make silly mistakes due to being nervous. I want to improve the mental side of playing so I am more comfortable when sitting across the table from someone. And then Jason Kilgore, longtime member of the Nation, says, I'd like to play a larger MTGO event with no punts / misplays as my goal. Certainly something that I think about. You know, so it comes up a lot. So how do you guys think about trying to, number one, reduce the number of mental mistakes that you make, but specifically online versus paper and things like that? Like, what kind of stuff do you think about when you look at this?
So I think it's easier to achieve this goal if you are fortunate enough to play both online and in paper. Because one of the ways that I've been able to tighten my play when I make that commitment to a specific deck in particular is by A, playing leagues with the given deck, and then reviewing my performance in those leagues, especially the games that I lose. One of the nice things about Modo is that you can replay any match you play on there, except for like tournament practice room. So if you play a league, you can actually see every league replay, I think, since the beginning of time. And you can play it frame by frame. And in doing so, you can start to identify where you may have taken the wrong path when you were a certain branch of a decision tree. And sometimes that's when everything unravels. And maybe that's because you didn't know what was in your opponent's hand. And as the game progresses and you develop more information, you might identify where a misplay may have occurred that you wouldn't have known previously. And if you get into the habit of doing that, it's a really great way to A, be stronger with the deck, B, actually identify the misplays when they happen, and C, potentially learn from them and translate that into paper play, you know, in Aaron's case in particular.
What you're getting at, Stan, actually kind of makes me want to get to what I thought sort of step one actually really is, and that's like defining a mistake. Because one thing you mentioned was like not maybe playing around or not thinking what an opponent might have had in hand, or thinking, or maybe going down the wrong decision tree. But like, I think that's sort of like a tier two, or excuse me, like an S tier type mistake, where it's like, I didn't play around something that they could have had, or my decision might have not been the best in the moment, and I can review that and know it. But like Aaron said something like making silly mistakes. Like, what's a mistake to you? Is it something straightforward? Like, you didn't, like, maybe you just like missequenced something and you're like, oh, I forgot to cast my sorcery speed burn spell before going to combat in a prowess deck. Or I forgot to put a counter on my Aether Vial during my upkeep, and I went through upkeep and now I can't do it anymore? Or is it like more nuanced, where it's like, I didn't see an onboard activated ability that my opponent had, and that blows me out? Or did I like miss an obvious advantageous block on board, or I didn't count my opponent's toughness correctly? Or is it like it more advanced, like I'm not playing around something unknown in my opponent's hand? So like, I think the first thing for me, at least, is being pretty realistic. Like, don't be too hard on yourself on what a mistake is. Like, there's known information and there's unknown information. And knowing the unknown, like you said, Stan, I think comes with intuition that comes through experience. Like, figuring out the unknown or trying to discern the unknown is like, I have to have reps and I have to know my opponent's deck and my deck.
Yeah. And in some cases, when you identify those positions where you don't know what you don't know, being able to, whether or not you review or play or not, you can start to make decisions of where you're playing with certain assumptions and you're essentially playing around what people may or may not have. And that's sometimes, I think, a mistake that people might make. They might realize that a person may or may not have something, but they don't even take the opportunity to try and play around it. And it's like they have it if they don't mentality. Sometimes that works out for you, but other times you could have maybe made a decision that could have let you have it both ways.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think the big thing here that I love, Shane, from what you guys are talking about is just identifying that the first thing you need to do is identify the mistakes that you are making and figure out how to address them, right? Because there are two things. One is, am I playing tightly within the rules? Do I understand the rules of the game and what the implications are? And then B is, am I making strategic misplays because of all the things that Stan was talking about a moment ago? And I think those are two, that's a great thing to do, sit down and go, okay, which ones am I not keeping up with, and how can I improve in those two places makes the most sense to me. I think in the case of rules in paper versus online play, I do think that playing Magic online is like the best way to understand the rules better than you ever could understand them in paper, but it's just a way to kind of like really understand the rules in the context of the harshest judge that there ever is, because there's no gray areas.
Ordering triggers, stacking.
Yeah, there's things. No gray areas on Magic Online. Now, it is a little bit of a double-edged sword, because if you get too used to just Magic Online, you'll do what I do, which is I am much more used to playing Magic on Magic Online. So I sometimes forget about rules or triggers or things like that in person. So you have to like be on top of that. But I do think if you're making mistakes based on not understanding all of the decision points you have based on the rules, Magic Online is the best way to help with that.
I think another thing to realize, and Magic Online has that explicit, and paper has it vaguely explicit, but it's a combined clock, is that notice how few of your games go to time, unless you're Stan playing like four color blank or something like that, right? Like not a lot of your games are going to go to time unless you're playing certain decks or learning something. You can slow down. Like you can look at the board state. You can look at the options that you have at hand, that your opponent has at hand. You don't have to rush through phases of turns. You don't have to go to combat as you know, immediately. Like remember in the semifinals of Pro Tour Hour of Devastation, where like the player against PVDDR went to combat to attack with their Hazoret for lethal, but they had two cards in hand.
Yeah, and they didn't discard them at the right time.
They didn't do anything in their pre-combat main, and they lost because of something like that. Like you don't have to rush; you can take your time. In paper, even more than on the MTGO clock, frequently I find.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I will say, try not to take time to like just like running through options in your mind over and over again and trying to make a decision between those. I think what you should do is take the time, like try to assess what your options are quickly, and then take the time to figure out what order you're supposed to do them in. Take that time to do that to make sure you're doing things deliberately with a plan, that you're not just doing things in like whatever order. Because I think you'll frequently find in Magic, you know, a lot of people when they're kind of like not engaged in the rules or when they're not ready to go up to that next level, they'll be like, well, it doesn't matter what I do. I have this thing to do. It doesn't matter how I do it here. I have these two things. It doesn't matter how I do it. The order always matters in Magic. And so every decision you make about when or why to do something should be have a reason behind it.
What you said, Dave, actually made something pop into my mind about engagement. And I think a lot of people feel like there's not a big middle ground between being like casual play and just sort of hanging out, having fun, playing chill and sort of letting whatever is going to happen. And then being like pro tour competitor, hyper engaged, hyper focused, and like kind of almost mentally exhausting yourself to keep engaged with the game. I think what the real key is that at a certain point in Magic games, the state change between turns is not that big. Like you don't have to relook at everything. You can only look at what you can just choose to look at what has changed and what new options there are. So like once you've done it once and you're aware of what's happening and just sort of monitor what's happening from turn to turn, then you don't have to like reassess everything and exhaust yourself by like thinking about every option and thing that's there because you've already done it. And so like just sort of having consistent engagement, I think, is a really easy way to avoid making mistakes because all you're doing is monitoring what's changed.
Jason had a line in his goal, which is to play a tournament without making any punts or misplays. Is that even possible?
I think it would be hard pressed to find even high level pros who say that they've played 8 or 9 rounds of Magic without making a mistake. You know, I do think it's maybe a little too harsh of a goal, you know?
Yeah. I think maybe you want to distinguish between, again, the type of mistakes where it's you make a punt based on the information in front of you, where it's like you should have done better because you could have done better, versus make a mistake based on unknown information where it's like you took a risk and then the risk just didn't pay out.
Yeah. And I think to close this chapter, the more that you're, if you're focusing more on making those strategic decisions better, I think that Stan talked a lot about how that connects with like maybe committing to a deck can help you get better at strategic thinking in that sense. It's about implicit things. It's about things that are unknown. Slowing down will help you with that some, but that is stuff that comes from study and exposure to the metagame. Because I think in a lot of situations, if you're like, well, I don't know what they have, it's really tough for you to make a decision based on the implicit knowledge of what might be in your opponent's hand. But, you know, at higher level play, that gets rewarded more and more and more. And that just comes through like repetition and training your mind to think that way. But you do have to stay up to date with the metagame because there's so many decks that lead to decisions like that.
Yeah, I promise not to belabor this point, but just to reiterate, when committing to a deck, what you end up eventually doing is developing heuristics that let you shortcut those situations that can turn into careless mistakes. And I think that's kind of those level up moments that you start to identify in players who maybe have mastered something because they just know exactly how to sequence their lands all the time to get into trouble as infrequently as possible.
Yeah. Last thing I would say about here too, that I think is interesting is when you commit to it, I found that when I commit to a deck for a long period of time, I actually learn more about decks in the metagame because I'm paying more attention to what my opponent is doing and what their deck looks like than I am going like, what are the cards in my hand? What are they even for? I'm still learning how to do these. I'm learning what a good mulligan is. You know, I get to focus a bit more on what they're doing as well in that context, which I think helps with that kind of like strategic, implicit kind of thinking that we're talking about, that kind of next level mistakes, quote unquote. All right. Next topic. Do you want to play the clip from Craig to lead this one off, Shane?
Craig M.
Hey, this is Craig from the Discord.
Hey, Craig.
So one of my broad goals for 2022 is to declutter my life. And for Magic, that means paring down my paper collection to one or maybe two decks per format, selling some stuff on MTGO, and getting away from saving every interesting deck that I see on Arena. So if you're looking for a discussion prompt for this episode, my questions to you all are, one, what things do you think about when deciding whether or not to let a given card or deck go? And two, have you ever moved on from a particular deck and been especially happy to have done so? Or have you ever moved on from a deck and later regretted it? Thank you for the great show.
You're welcome.
So that's a goal and questions.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that he gave us some prompts to help with that one. Now, I know that this has been a topic on your mind lately, Shane, a little bit.
Yeah, it happened. This is the cycle.
When you say a little bit, do you mean for the last 10 years?
Yeah, this is the cycle that I live in, which is like, I think it happens more with the Horizons sets because it makes you feel like you want to / have to buy stuff, or else you like suffer the consequences financially. Or I know that Stan, you and I especially both just like having options.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like we just wanna be able to play the cards, even if we're not at the store that often.
Options is my middle name.
Just wanna have the cards. But one goal for me, and this is on board with on the Craig train, is consolidate paper down a little bit again. I just have way too much value in my Magic cards for how little I just can use them. Like, so, and, but also not only just for like using them, it's like, I'd like to just force myself to focus. And even with like 4 or 5 decks, that's still more than I can play. You know what I mean? In paper, it's just keeping my options open. So like, maybe I can just keep stuff like Hammer and like maybe some kind of like Grixis, Rakdos, Luris pile type stuff, or maybe like a Burn deck and maybe Yogg. Because I think Dave, all and Stan, all three of us, we enjoy engaging with the game as collectors and players. But like, to what end is the question for me right now? Like, there's just always a cost benefit analysis here. That's just the harsh reality. It's like, is it worth it to have $15,000 of Magic cards?
Yes.
I don't know. I just don't play paper that much. I can play Magic online. My paper play that I do get has to compete with like other games right now, like, you know, with Flesh and Blood or board games with my friends or my wife. It's just like, you know, I mean, I can't play Flesh and Blood online. I can play Magic online. But I know like in a year I'm going to be rebuying Fury or something. Do you know what I mean? It's just like the way my brain works, but I'd like to just reduce a little bit.
Did you get rid of your Furies?
No, but I'm just, that's probably on my list to get rid of.
It's tough. I will tell you, Craig, that I don't sell cards ever. Basically, I just have cards, and maybe someday I'll sell them all at once. But, you know, and I also don't get to play in person in paper that much. And this is just a choice I made when I got into Modern again to just be like, I'm just going to be someone who buys and holds, and just kind of, that's what it is for me, you know. And I like to have a few different decks. I like to collect, like Shane said, I like to open packs. It's just part of what I think is fun. So there is a lot of overhead to organizing the cards that probably I would be time better spent doing other things, but also I kind of find the organizing relaxing. So it's all part of the way that I enjoy Magic for me. Now, I will say, you know, I don't try to buy like every card, every single card all the time. So I feel like, Shane, your collection kind of fluctuates a little. Like mine is sort of like a steady growth curve where it's just kind of like up in a straight line. And I feel like yours is kind of like up and then down, and then it's bigger than mine. And then
it always gets bigger. It's like the oceans, you know, it does go up and down with the tides a little bit.
Yeah. But I think that anybody who wants to reduce what they have, take some money out of Magic if they feel like there's money to be had, I think that that's a good plan to do generally, unless you're someone who's playing all the time. And that's just what it is.
I think it's just being realistic. Like, what's it worth to you? And sometimes it's just worth it to be like, I love Magic. I love my collection. I love these cards. I love having them ready to go. I love making decks. Yeah, it's us. I mean, but sometimes it's like, I think I could do a little bit less. Maybe I can get a couple thousand out of this.
Yeah, the hard thing here is just like, I think now Craig is someone who is devoted to a couple of different decks that he really loves and has always played those decks. But Shane, sometimes when I look at the list of decks that you have here, like Hammer and Yawgmoth, I do kind of like wonder, like those are decks that I feel like something could happen to those decks where they just won't be real Modern decks anymore. And like, you have to be okay. When you go with a strategy, you kind of have to be okay with that, right? Because in the future, if you were like, wow, now there's this deck that I really think is cool that runs 4 Fury, but I got rid of this card that's clearly a staple. And so it comes down to like, well, do you get rid of marginal staples, which only have a small amount of value in them to sell? Or do you get rid of real ones, or, you know, so that you get more money out of it, but later on you might have to spend more to get them back? It's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I mean, like Murktide will probably get added to this list only because like it's like there's not a ton of value over the like Rakdos, Grixis, Lurrus pile stuff besides, you know, the Tarns, and I'm not selling Tarns at $25 each because they're going to go up eventually. So, you know, but I think it's more than just financial. I think it's like mental clarity, right? It's about like, does having fewer options make me focus more? Right. And I think that's an important thing to realize about yourself is, you know, does having too much stuff make me worse at the game? Does it inhibit my goal of being a better Magic player? Does it inhibit my goal of focusing on a particular thing? And I think that's really, I think one reason that one might want to do this, right, is just sort of like, is just having less makes you mentally feel more clarity.
I think if the money is negligible, that's the best reason to do it. Whereas, you know, if you're going to make some money off of selling cards and you're not doing it just to pay your mortgage or feed yourself at night, but it's just like to have a little bit of that money back, fine, go for it. If you're doing it for, you know, personal sustainability reasons, then it's probably more important to do that, right? But what I'm getting at is if the money is negligible and you sell a card that you want to play with again in a year or two, you can probably just buy it again, and you ultimately paid a rental fee.
I've never done that.
Physical copy.
Never done that before.
You can do a little arbitrage and make a profit off of what you bought them at, which is even better. But at the end of the day, we're playing Modern, I think, in part because we can afford to. And if we could afford to buy a place at a Bob's once, you can probably do it one more time. Or, now, buying an entire deck, buying an entire deck over and over, that actually gets a little harder. But
we have some similar on-trend messages. Our next one's up from Dom.
Hello, Dive Down Nation. Happy almost 2022. So my personal goal actually is interesting because I recently took a kind of extended break, for me at least, a little over a full month, completely cold turkey away from the game. Actually sold out a lot of my paper collection, particularly like my Modern stuff. And yeah, I actually feel like this was a pretty healthy move for me personally. But I think what that does is it allows me to reapproach the game and refocus on what I love, which is Magic. I realize I do really love the game, and I really love the community. I think I just kind of was kind of consuming too much. And I think that, anyone considering, downsizing their consumption of Magic content, go for it. It helped me a lot. I have just resubscribed to a couple of specific communities and has kept me, satisfied with that. I'm popping back into Historic on Arena, and I'll probably re-up my Mana Traders account here soon and just do some Modern on Moto. So yeah, anyways, happy 2022 to everyone. Excited to hear everyone else's goals for 2022. Mine's kind of already underway, but excited to just kind of refocus on the game and just play and listen to the content that I really enjoy. And that's about it. Catch you later.
Thanks, Dom.
I'm glad he resubbed to us.
It's nice to know that we made the cut, I guess. Dom always sounds so good.
I know.
So good.
Dom, if you didn't sell out of Magic, I would have asked you to replace Shane on the pod.
I mean, it's
that beautiful silky voice.
He's not as angry as me.
Come on and do the ad reads. Anyway, what do you guys think about this? We, a lot of people talk about moderating their level of engagement with lots of different things, whether it's social media, whether it's their hobbies, whether it's being up to the minute on every Marvel spoiler or whatever thing people are into on the internet. What do you guys think about that right now? Stan, you have any thoughts with about seeking balance in your life, or how you manage to do it if you feel good about it?
It's not conscious for me. I don't think about how to seek balance. I just do it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I think it's a very healthy coffee, diet, exercise that really helps me achieve balance.
Wet shaving now,
wet
too.
Wet shaving.
Is in there, too. Yeah. Well, for people like Shane and I who tend to get a little bit more off the rails on things sometimes.
Yeah. But Dave, I look at you as like very on the rails guy sometimes. Like, you've got the family, you've got the busy job, you've got the successful relationship. I mean, not that mine isn't, but I'm just, you've got it all, Dave. You got it all.
I mean, I still sometimes spend too much time on Twitter consuming both Magic content and the latest angry political content, which is basically what my Twitter feed is, and other podcasts that I follow. I think that finding balance on the level of engagement that's healthy is really hard. And I think it's like you have to really work to realize those moments where you're doing something kind of compulsively and not doing it because you enjoy it. And I think that's the thing that I have trouble with sometimes, is not realizing when I'm just reading this because I'm trying furiously to find some way to like fill my brain for 3 minutes, where really what I should be doing is just like taking a minute, relaxing for a second, and maybe thinking about, what we should be having for dinner that night or whatever, instead of being like, well, I got to check out what's going on with spoilers today. Not that I don't enjoy that, but I think that there's a lot of times where it crosses over into not enjoying it that you should try to be aware of.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about this one. It feels a little out of our pay grade. It does remind me of something, Dave, what you just said, where these coping mechanisms, they work for you until they no longer work for you. And having self-awareness about them is the best way to recognize when they stop working for you. And whether it's cold turkey or weaning yourself off, whichever approach is more sustainable and the most habit-forming, knowing when you've reached that point is when you decide to make that change. And it sounds like in Dom's case, he recognized that it was time to make a change with Magic. He did the cold turkey method. It worked for him. And then he was able to scale it back in a more sustainable way. Good for you. You know what I like about Don's submission is that it is possible. Like, he is evidence that people can make it work if they need to scale it back somehow and then find a way to fit it back in their life in a healthier way. You can do it. At Nerdybeard on Twitter, right? You can maybe talk to Dom yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm there with you, Dave, I think, especially, which is just like, sometimes I feel sort of not obsessed, but I just sort of feel like I'm obligated to be engaged, and more than just an obligation, it's like just an obligation to my hobby and an obligation to the podcast, where it's like, I'm listening to like 5 or 6 other podcasts a week. I'm looking at MTG Goldfish like every day. I'm looking at my collection value because I like doing the financial aspect sometimes. I'm like maybe playing Arena every day because I want to get those dailies. Or I'm like kind of disconnected, where it's like besides the podcast and besides talking to you all and the Discord, I'm kind of a little bit off. And that's where I have been like maybe the last week or two, because the whole Magic community is pretty off, right? I've listened to some podcasts, but it's not like I'm checking what's really going on in the Magic world, because I've had like an awesome little vacation. And like this past sort of week and a half has felt like a month of sort of just refreshing my brain. And I think it's really easy to get obsessive with hobbies and interests, especially Magic, because there's not only so much to the game and so many ways to engage with it, but people are just so engaged with it themselves that there's just so much to explore in terms of the content, right? There's articles, and like, I think Dom mentioned this, like he was like on, you know, you're on Facebook groups, you're on Discords, you're listening to podcasts, maybe you're in Twitch chats, maybe you're, you know, there's all sorts of ways that you can be reading articles, you can be digesting content, and just takes up a lot of your time and your mental energy, let alone playing the game, right? So this actually gets into one of my primary goals that I wanted to talk with you all about. I kind of referenced it, I think, 2 weeks ago, which is like getting better at defining and compartmentalizing the time in my life. Because I think it's easy to feel like, and I think a lot of people would say this, and I say it, is like, I don't have enough time to do what I want. Like, I feel too busy. I've got too many responsibilities. I can't get to the LGS even once a week. I can't possibly finish this video game that takes 50 hours because I just don't feel like I can even start. But it's like, I'm fritting away all these blocks of time in silly ways sometimes, where like I'm reading some random article, I'm chatting randomly on Discord, I'm sort of idly surfing, I might be on Twitter. You know, I'm not actually doing one thing entirely. And like, what if I, instead of wasting an hour here or an hour there throughout the week, I just like stopped doing that. And then I had 4 hours where I can just be like, this is the night I go to the LGS. Like, I've got 4 hours, I can just be at the LGS, and that's focus time. Right. It's just like, it's, and having full focus on what I'm doing in a moment, and then trying to develop habits and schedules that enable me to focus on things more fully, instead of like these bunch of small things haphazardly. Like, instead of doing show notes in front of the TV with my wife next to me, maybe I just spend 60 minutes on Tuesday and I'm just fully focused on doing show notes. And then the show notes are like, they're done. You know what I mean? At that point, it's just like, and then I can just be like, I don't have to be like that guy in his computer. I can just be like that guy on the couch and, you know, focusing on something in the moment. And I think what I just want to really do is tell myself and tell my partner and tell my family that I'm giving more of myself to the things that I'm saying matter. And then I'm also then able to make time for those things because I'm wasting less of it. And I think that that is like, it's not a super ambitious goal in and of itself, but I think it's like, it's changing your habits.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a super ambitious goal, except for it's literally the most ambitious goal, which is like, right? being present is a hard thing. And like, I, you know, we're kind of gotten off from maybe where Dom's observation or sharing of his goal is, but I think that a lot of, when I think about consuming too much or trying to do too many things at once or needing to pare back, it's really about like what you said too, Shane, which is like, how can I have more moments in my life where I am present, fully present for the people and with the people, with the whatever I'm supposed to be doing or who I'm supposed to be talking to, all those kind of things. So I think that that's a good goal that I probably share quite a bit And for me, it probably starts with deleting Twitter or something like that, but we'll talk about that some other time.
Thanks for letting me spew a little bit.
Absolutely. So in a complete opposite of at least Craig's goal, we had Van Gogh from our Discord share that they wanted to build 6 to 8 fun modern decks and have them ready whenever they want to bust out some modern among friends. I think it's a great goal. I think, of course, you know, modern's expensive, so, you know, keep an eye on that, of course. But you know, if you have a group that you are getting together with on the regular enough to do that, I think it's awesome to be able to be the person who helps make more people able to play the format that we all enjoy.
Yeah, the hardest part there is just whether or not you want to keep it up to date as the format evolves. That's the one thing I'd caution you against. I made a modern gauntlet before MH2. It was one of my 2020 projects because we were in lockdown and I had no one to play with but myself. So a lot of those decks kind of just aren't really viable anymore. And that's something to bear in mind, how important it is to be up to date with your metagame.
Yeah, and your gauntlet was Green Tron was one of the decks in it, right? What else was
it? It was Tron, Burn, Ponza, Control, Elves, and maybe something else that is escaping me now. Yeah. I think I had old Grixis Shadow. It was the other one.
Yeah. And so those decks, some of those decks are still around for sure, but are they all decks that you want to have ready to take to a tournament all the time anymore when the updates to Grixis could be expensive, the updates to, you know, whatever could be expensive, and then Tron, and then other decks just kind of disappear, like Tron disappears, Control, you suddenly need 4 chalices for, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Solitude.
Right, and that was really one of the issues that I ran into trying to maintain my gauntlet for this year, is that there's so much overlap between the lands and between MH2 cards. It's hard to figure out how do I separate them into unique individual decks that don't necessarily require some number of Misties or Scalding Tarns or... That's why decks like Tron and Dredge and even maybe like Infect or Hammer is actually a really good example of this, are just like perfect decks to exist in a gauntlet because they don't have to necessarily share cards with a bunch of other popular strategies.
Stan, you can just proxy the cards for at-home gauntlet. I mean, you can just print them out. You can just print extra copies.
Sure, but that's not the fun part of building the thing.
I know. Well, no, I'm saying like if you need 2 copies of Scalding Tarn or 8 copies, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think when people want to build something like this or a cube, it is also an extension of a collection that has utility.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not just about a board game. It's just about having something that you own. It's like a non-fungible token in real life.
Mm-hmm. You own the only one.
So speaking of more.
Right.
Speaking of more, we have Aaron G, who has 2 goals for 2022. And one is to improve their knowledge and how they practice for Magic in general through playtesting and consuming lots of different knowledge bases, including podcast articles and videos, as well as interacting with people who have a greater knowledge of MTG than themselves.
Well, Aaron G shared earlier about better technical play.
Oh, okay. That's all right. I thought that was also
we got Aaron G. So this is Aaron G's second goal.
We got both your goals there. So yeah, I mean, it's wild. I mean, we have people who want to moderate or reduce their content consumption. And then I think other times it's like, hey, I have time. How can I get better?
Play more leagues on Modo.
I actually think that's probably the number one thing to do if you want to try to get better. I mean, watching videos is great. Reading articles is great, especially when you get to a point when you can start thinking about sideboard or really clear like meta matchup kind of stuff that you need to know about a certain deck. But I do think that almost all the time you want to be able to put effort into playing.
If you can make your play time more engaged and academic, that'll help too. And one of the ways you can do that also is using a Magic the Gathering coach, which is something that I've been doing for the last month or two. I've been working with Dom Harvey from Star City Games, who does coaching sessions on this website called Metafy.gg. Dom Harvey is one of many Magic coaches. Sam Black is on there as well. Tons of other players who you recognize. And if you have a goal, whether it's for a specific format or a specific deck, and you have some extra disposable income and you're committed to getting better, and maybe you're already playing a lot and you feel like you've plateaued, which is the position that I was in, I was like, you know, I want some professional advice. My therapist doesn't give me magic advice. So maybe a magic therapist will. And maybe you can find a coach. Maybe you can also find someone online who's really generous with their time, who will give you reactions to screenshots or other hypothetical situations too. But this is something that Zach Allen actually kind of inspired me to do when he was on our podcast a month or two ago, when he talked about how his play was improved when he started working with Harlan Fear. And it was like, I want a Harlan, but I didn't have one. Dave isn't returning my calls. Shane and I don't like any of the same decks. So I found a professional, and maybe that's something else that you can consider as well.
I mean, I love the idea of trying to make it quality if you can do it. And also, I think you'll find, so I don't know if you've ever taken music lessons or anything like that in your life. The rates that I've seen for magic coaching, it's very similar to like
so cheap,
going though. to take a music class for an hour once a week. So I would take a look, because I think the money is worth it if you have the time. Just an outside opinion.
If you have the time and the drive,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Why don't we play the next drop that we have?
All right.
Hello, my wonderful friends and favorite podcast host. I have three magic goals for the coming years. One is to engage with the hobby more actively and more usefully. I have a tendency to spend most of my time reading articles and checking deck lists, and I'd like to be able to actually go to more LGSs and actually be able to play once or twice a month instead of just kind of messing around in my own head. Two, I'd like to 5-0 with both an Elves list and a Winota list in Modern, so that I can make myself believe that miracles are still alive and exist. And three is to meet the Podfather Dave, so I can check him off my list of meeting the co-hosts in person. Thank you guys for all you do, and I wish you the best of luck in all the recordings to come.
Well, Spencer, we'll see what we can do to make that third one happen at some point. Fingers crossed. You know, Shane does live in this. We know that Shane and you live in the same town, Spencer, so it's always a chance I'll be out there to visit Shane, whether it's magic related or not, depending on how the world evolves.
Oh, yeah, right.
A couple of other people had similar goals, too. We can go back to Spencer in 1 second, but Eric from our Discord said that they were going to finally make a Magic Online account, and also Ron from our Discord mentioned being more involved with Magic, whether finance or league play. So people trying to get more engaged in the game. And I think that one thing here is in a quality kind of way, like Stan was talking about. So what do we think about how to get more effective time out of the play that you do? We already talked about doing leagues. I think trying to set aside it one or a couple times a month to go to the LGS is a good goal, of course, for people who live close to one and like to play paper.
Yeah, and keeps your physical play fresh, and like, you know, your physical engagement is different than sometimes just your mental engagement at the table versus on the screen. I definitely have noticed some differences in my play in paper versus my play on screen. I'm much more willing to like sit back and sort of like be chill in the environment and not pay as much attention as I do when I'm playing online, where I'm like really looking at the board state and seeing what's going on. I sort of trust my opponent to do things legally in paper a lot when I'm playing more chill and more casually.
I think
the difference is there for sure.
Yeah. One way to be more engaged is being hyper aware of your assumptions about a deck, and then using a match or a league or a tournament to challenge those assumptions. It's almost like the scientific method, where you develop a hypothesis where you maybe think about a specific card, and it's like, you know, Emrakul is for these matchups. And then you bring it in for those matchups and see how it works. And doing these tests along the way to A, develop these heuristics, and B, get more familiar with the strategy and all the pieces within that strategy, rather than just kind of, to Shane's point, trust that your opponents are playing legally, maybe being a little bit more chill in paper play and kind of just going through the motions. I think it's harder to learn when you're going through the motions unless you learn from a glaring mistake that you are punished for immediately.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea, Stan. I guess the one thing I would say is I love hearing everybody's goals about playing. What are our goals going into next year? What are you all gonna try to do compared to what you're doing now, or what do you want to do in the future? Stan, what do you think?
Oh my God, this could be the whole episode. I have so many goals.
Well, not your goal. Just your goal for how often do you want to play? Where do you want to try to play? Like, what are you thinking about trying to do in the participation in the next year?
I mean, my participation
has
to
be already doing it
a little bit. I mean, it has to be more focused on Moto than perhaps ever before. When you have a baby at home, it's hard to find the time to play in paper. And when you're living in the middle of an endemic virus and you don't want to get your baby sick, then you tend to quarantine more often as well. So I will say my specific goal is to get through at least, at the bare minimum, a league a week. And I say that just because sometimes it takes me a couple of days to get through a league. But to be a little bit less about quantity with how much I play and be more focused on the quantity of decks that I try. So, okay, join me on this journey. We did an episode like this where we talked about our individual goals at like the end of 2019, I want to say.
Yes. Yep.
We haven't done anything quite like it. And at that time, I went to revisit that episode. I said that I actually want to be more focused on fewer decks and become a little bit more of a master at certain decks. And I actually feel like I kind of did that. Where in 2020, I played a ton of Ponza, Rain or Shine for that deck. In 2021, I played a ton of Crashcade, Rain or Shine. And I sort of discovered the benefits of focusing on a single strategy. And now I'm starting to understand what I'm lacking as a modern player by being super hyper-focused on those strategies and what I learn and improve when we do our deck dives on strategies that I'm less familiar with. So
like how those decks win, like what they don't want to see, how you can fight, like what you don't want to see cast against you, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I just kind of think I'm at a point right now as a player where I stand to gain more by maybe taking like the mana symbol approach or the demonic tutors approach where you kind of play anything for science and be less precious about the time you devote to a league for the sake of learning the format and learning what different strategies to do. And maybe those are fringe strategies. Maybe those are really popular strategies that you just haven't touched on yet. But then also having a reliable backup when it counts. So while I still might be more leaning toward Crashcade as a deck I want to register for a bigger tournament, if I'm actually doing a league, I don't need to do another Crashcade league. I know what the deck is about at this point, and it's more about figuring out what else is happening in the format just so that I'm more prepared with whatever I play or whatever I play against.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like my kind of participation goals are kind of different from yours right now in the sense that I sort of just want to play a lot of different decks going forward to just have a better perspective to share on the podcast, even though I'm not trying to shoot for high level results or high level play. You know what I mean? So I think that it's kind of like, I feel like I'm not in a moment where I can really try to craft and move towards upping my results as much. But what I want to do is just kind of experience everything that there is to offer in modern right now and just kind of enjoy it and just have fun and not kind of worry too much about the results part of it right now for me. But I think that could change in a year or two when I, when maybe, you know, I have more free time, it's easier to get out of the house, all that kind of stuff. But I think that's just kind of where I'm at, where I'm going to approach Magic Online, like the couple of leagues that I get to do a week, a little bit more like I'm going to spin the wheel and try to have some fun and try to not kind of take it too seriously from what I have in the last couple of years.
Yeah, for playing, for me, I think it's mostly just playing more. I think I'd like to have more leagues that are for me instead of for the podcast. And then in that way, they are for the podcast as well, because it just makes me better at the game and just more engaged with it for sure. And I think that goes into my earlier goals I was talking about, which is like, how do I create better compartmentalization of time where it's like, hey, I'm going to spend an hour on two or three matches. And that's just sort of like, that's what I do. That's what I do on Wednesdays. Before bed at 9 till 10, I go play a few matches of Magic. And that's something I think if I can build that in more, it becomes part of a routine as opposed to just like randomly, I think I can turn on Magic Online right now.
Can we briefly touch on Spencer's point about trophying with Winota and Elves? Because I actually have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think that's great. And actually, I think there is a voicemail I like to play that fits in with this as well. Can you play Mickey S's voicemail, Shane?
Which Mickey S?
Oh, you know
here
which
it comes.
One.
Hey, guys. It's your good old pal, Mickey S. No, the other Mickey S from the Discord. My 2022 goal is, in fact, breaking it. And what I mean by that is I want my deck to be mentioned as a deck on the prestigious podcast known as The Dive Down. really, as a lover of jank, I'm hoping that we could find something a little bit off the beaten path that might actually be competitive. So that is my 2022 goal.
So Spencer had called, picked out a couple of decks that he was really interested in that were kind of off meta ones. Mickey, as we all know, is someone who loves to tweak something, put his own spin on it, occasionally play something that is way off meta, brew something. What do you think about that, Stan?
I think we have a very well-known Modo player who is a perfect model for how this is possible. And they've even been on our podcast. And it's Hamahayashi.
Mm-hmm. I think I actually think that Zach Mana Symbol is someone who's close to this as well, because he can play any deck that he wants to, but he does tend to go with things that he's kind of put his own spin on too.
Sure. What I'm really getting at is, at least in Hamahayashi's approach, though Zach is a great example as well, is that he'll play any card for the end goal of winning more matches. And even if it's like Hammer of Bogarden and people will continue to scratch their heads 6 months later, he has a reason to play it and he's willing to do that because it keeps working for him. Or playing like a bunch of Blast Zones in a mono red Blood Moon deck too. And I think whether you're trying to trophy with Elves or Winota or identify an all new deck entirely, one of the ways that I've at least seen other people do this successfully and routinely is by clutching fewer pearls about what's quote-unquote playable in Modern and be willing to experiment and fail and iterate as often as possible. Even if that means doing something totally left field and playing a card that just doesn't see play anywhere because it looks really dopey. But if it works for you, then we'll talk about it on the dive down. You just have to win a Modern challenge and also send us a lot of money.
Or top eight, a Modern challenge, right? Not win one necessarily.
No, Mickey has to win.
Mickey has to win. We better see Turtle Power at the top of it. Well, speaking of performance goals associated with things, we did have a whole lot of people who sent in, or at least told us about performance goals that we had. So we have Cora, who said she's been pushing herself to get better at Modern and Legacy and just want to cash top eight a bigger event this year, be that an SCG or NRG or something similar.
Oh, Cora, you know that we live in Denver. We don't have SCGs or NRGs here. Are you going to be traveling? Because you got to tell me first. It's a road trip back to the Midwest.
And then we have Shark from the Discord, who said that their goal is to get into the energy circuit and expand the circle of friends using the greatest hobby in the world. Dylan from the Discord would like to 5-0 a league for the first time. Cam from the Discord, 3-1 or 4-0 more consistently at FNM, keep building my Modern staple collection, get a 500 over 500 record at a big tournament or maybe a day two somewhere. And Mikok from Discord said top eight to challenges.
Woohoo.
Yeah, that's a big called shot as well, for sure.
Yeah.
Performance goals.
Performance goals. We have some pretty concrete where it's like, hey, I want a top eight something. I want a top eight two challenges. I want to, you know, Cora said that they want a top eight, like an NRG or SEG level type event. We have people who are just like, I want a 5-0 league for the first time. So we have, you know, different perspectives on what a performance goal really is here. What do you think about performance goals? I mean, Dave, I know that you have perspective on these, or you have in the past. And Stan, I want to talk to you more deeply about these, because I think this has been sort of a consistent theme in some of the goals that you've had in the past.
Sure. I think that performance goals can be useful markers of progress and success, but I think they need to be paired and coupled with process goals that are actually actionable. Because if your goal is to top eight a Modern challenge, it's possible. But if you put all the work into it and you still miss the mark, that doesn't mean you failed by all accounts. Because maybe you got better at Modern as a result and trophied a ton on the way to that path or on the way to that destination. So I like personally having those performance goals as a way to say, like, I set my eyes on something, I did it, and now I can figure out what the next step is beyond that. But I think it's really important, I know for my mental health, and I think for a lot of people's mental health in general, is to not live or die by the outcome of that specific performance goal, especially if it's not entirely within your grasp, since a lot of other people are trying to do the exact same thing.
That's the thing, right? Is like, there is a finite pool of top eights, and there's a lot of players. And so when you're saying like, I have a results oriented sort of goal, then you're sort of saying like, I want a piece of this finite pie. And I think at some point, a lot of players, including us, get to that, right? Where it's like, we've dipped our toes in competitive events for many years. We've played SCG Opens. We've played Magic Online events. We've done PPTQs, right? And at some point you're like, I can do this. I can do this too. Like, I play enough. I know the meta enough. I know the game well enough. Or if everything aligns right, then I can do it. And like, you know, you make your first day two, you cash your first event, you make your first PPTQ top eight, or even, you know, finish it and you win it, right? Or, you earn some cash for playing the game and you're like, sweet, like, what's my next step? And like that pyramid gets smaller and smaller, where the goals are harder and harder to attain because there are fewer and fewer of them. There's a lot more people day twoing than there are top eighting, right? And so like, what defines a challenge versus setting yourself up for frustration is, I think, what you're talking about, Stan, right? Is like, what's a realistic goal, not only for how many lottery winners there are going to be, but also like, what do I have time for? What do I have the skill for? What's actually making me a better player? Dave, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, personally, I talked a moment ago that I was going to try to not have too many performance goals this year for myself. So that's kind of where my mind is at. I just want to have a lot of fun playing Modern. I think that I totally agree with Stan on the point that you should have goals that help you move along, even if you don't get the results. So process goals are a great way to think about it. I think this couples really closely with the stuff we were talking about earlier with the playing without making mistakes, you know, playing better technically, playing tighter. I think those goals are much more achievable than the ones that have a number next to them. But it is great to, I think the one thing to keep in mind too is that you can get to a point where you can be ready when chance aligns for you to kind of make that results kind of goal. And I think that's almost what you should plan for, is try to be mentally prepared through great technical play, understanding of the meta, and putting yourself in situations where if things go your way, then you're ready to top eight something, or you're ready to day two something, and feel good about what decisions you made in that context because the competition later in a tournament does get a lot harder than it does at the beginning of the tournament. And that's just true. I think if you can feel like you made it deep into a tournament and you played well in that context, you should feel pretty good regardless of whether you came in 14th place or 20th place or 6th place, like whatever it is there.
Yeah, I think that's totally right, Dave, right? Which is like, by not making a mistake, you're going to get those two extra percentage points that are entirely impossible for you to know when you're rolling that. When you're rolling the 100-sided die and you get the 62 instead of the 59, you don't know that, but you happen to top 16 that day, or you happen to win that eighth match that got you into day two or something like that. And those are the things that sort of just, everything has to sort of align at the right time. And sometimes it just doesn't happen for some of the best players in the world, and they have an entirely off year. You know what I mean? Like, that, those are things that happen. Poker players just run cold for months or something like that. And there are people who are making the right decisions, and their headspace is probably good, and they're doing, and they're testing with people, and they're playing regularly, and just stuff goes sideways. And so I think it's important to have goals that are both process and performance, because like you said, is then you're in the place where if your process is right, then your performance will get there eventually, probably, depending on what your goals are.
But just keep it in perspective. There are things that are in your control and there are things that aren't in your control. And, you know, the best you can do is put yourself in a good position to take advantage of things when they are going your way, I think. All right. I think we have one last question / goal, depending. And I think it's more about the podcast than anything else. And it's from Joe. Yeah,
let's talk about the podcast and podcast goals. So
yeah.
We'll play Joe C's.
Hey, it's Joe Chaney from The Nation. Long time, first time. I got some questions for you guys today. First, what would need to happen for you to cover Pioneer and Historic again? What changes would need to happen to those formats, or is it just a matter of event coverage? Also, Is there any interest in you guys ever covering Legacy or Commander content, maybe as like a one-off thing? Additionally, would you guys be interested in maybe getting a pod together with some Nation members and playing Commander sometime? Mostly Stan and David, because I'm sure Shane is a hard no. Anyway, happy New Year. Love you guys. Love the pod. God bless.
All right. I think we should answer the last couple of questions there faster or easily. Commander is pretty much off the table for us as a show, right? Like,
and it's not a level of enjoyment. I think it's a level of what can we actually bring to the community of podcasts.
It's definitely a level of enjoyment for me, but
yeah. And that too. Yeah. I mean,
agreed.
Yeah. I mean, I would, as far as playing Commander with members, people on the Discord sometime over Spell Table, I would be up for it. I have dismantled the only Commander deck that I have, but who knows, maybe someday I'll decide to pick up a pre-con and then I could do that. So I think that's possible. I don't think we have much to add to any discussion about Commander as a format at all. It's totally different from what we do. It really
I
is.
Know that there's a reliable group of people doing like the competitive EDH thing, like CEDH, and they've been doing that for months and months and months. And of course, that's interesting to me. It's competitive, but at the same time, it's like how many things can I focus on competitively in my life? And that's probably not one of them. But I appreciate the fact that Commander can be more casual. It can be more of a board game and hanging out with friends, and it can be pretty cutthroat. And I understand that. And it's not, I think it's just that what can we bring to this environment besides ourselves, I suppose.
All right. So let's talk about Legacy quickly, because that would be totally new ground for us. I also feel like that's extremely unlikely, but maybe a bonus episode for fun sometime if it seems really cool. Yeah. I know Stan has done a little bit of Legacy here and there. I haven't played Legacy literally probably since it was a format, but
I mean, I think what could be cool is our usual sort of bonus episode thing, and this is just spitballing on the fly with you all, is if we get maybe a couple other podcast hosts from like a Legacy pod, and we talked about how it's similar to Modern, how it's different, how to get into Legacy, play patterns that might branch to it, and that'd be like a cool thing. We could cross promote, have some fun, have a good conversation, and learn from each other. We'll see.
I think it for me, the most interesting any of these formats are in general. And this is me approaching it strictly as a player, is when it's the format of the month on the Mana Traders tournament. Otherwise, I really don't care. So if we as a podcast decide to cover something, I will make myself care. But that's kind of the only time I ever even begin to think about it. And that's because time is precious. I think about the Dive Down a lot as it is. We tend to focus on Modern, so that's where my interests lie. And remember, the Dive Down was born out of our collective love for Modern. We were a Modern podcast first. We weren't a Magic show, so to speak. So I think that's also something to keep in mind when you, as a listener in general, wonder, like, will the Dive Down ever cover Commander or Pioneer or Historic or Standard? A lot of it is driven by what we as individuals find most interesting, given our schedule and attention spans. And for the longest time, it's been Modern primarily. And that's why I think that'll likely remain to be the focus. And other formats might just be secondary, small dip our toe moments that come here and there because there's some other external force that's inspiring us to dip our toe in it.
I mean, yeah, let's say like in 2023, we're having Pioneer GPs. And it's down in Dallas or Phoenix or Chicago or something like that. I can guess that we'd probably go. I can guess that we'd probably maybe we check it out and play it. But like for now, it's like it's a low click zone. It's a low interest zone, both for us and other people. And I think if Pioneer is the healthiest format in the game or something like that, it doesn't mean it's the most interesting to the most people, including us, right? And I don't want this segment to sort of be like, hey, y'all, this is why we don't cover other things. But I think it's just like a healthy reminder to us, too, of like why we even have this podcast in the first place, which is to maintain our engagement and our engagement with each other and to hopefully deliver like a cool product that a lot of people like listening to and can be part of our community.
Yeah. I mean, we've certainly covered Historic and Pioneer in the past, and I think we had fun doing it, and it was, they were nice changes of pace for a couple of minutes, but we did find ourselves pulled back to this, especially over the last 6 months or so, 4 months or so. It's been what we played Historic for a listener episode a couple of weeks ago or 6 weeks ago or so. So I agree with what you guys are saying. I do think that if Pioneer suddenly becomes much more interesting somehow or much more covered, I would have some more energy into going back to that one, mostly because it's an online and paper format. I have little interest in dipping my toe back into Historic full-time right now because there's no shot of it ever being a online and paper format the way that there is for Pioneer, which is kind of like, I want one, I've talked about this before, I want one consistency of experience that I can use online testing for paper play for.
You know, one of the reasons we stopped covering Pioneer as a podcast, I think, is interest in the format died down significantly because the format architect sort of left it to flounder once upon a time. And then they fixed it. And over time, it's regained some of that popularity. And I think, as Shane alluded to, sometimes people are even saying that it's actually the best constructed format out there. One of the reasons why I still haven't jumped back into it is I don't want to have to manage a Pioneer and a Modern collection, because there's a lot of cards that don't overlap. And I like being mostly focused on mana bases that are based on Fetch Shock and not necessarily have to worry about getting these, you know, the dual-sided pathway lands in every color, or these new Innistrad slow lands, which are really great in Historic, I find, and I actually like playing with them, but I don't need to buy more cards when I already have such a bought-in collection for Modern too. So if we do it, I'll do it in earnest, but I'm not rushing to the LGS to play Pioneer for a reason, even though I believe everyone who says it's a fun format.
I also think for us, just as far as people who have really enjoyed making a podcast together, I think that we feel a little bit more like we're on solid ground when we're just focusing on Modern, you know, because we come back to the same thing. You know, Stan's like, oh, I'm going to do this monthly meta check-in. I think we have these ideas of things that we can do with the format that, once we have a little bit of focus, that I think help us feel like we're building something instead of constantly running around like trying to learn, you know, three different formats a foot deep instead of trying to concentrate on Modern to a much deeper level. And, you know, we're just not good enough players to do more. Stan might be now.
I mean, it's not even a matter of like good enough. It's just a matter of like some players just can dedicate more time. Like they're just professional content creators, or it's like that's where they are in their life. And I think that's like just good to realize, like we have the time for X and not Y. And X right now is an awesome Modern format, and hopefully pretty awesome Modern podcast.
We're casual spikes. We're not professional spikes. We're not even aspiring spikes.
Right. It's true. It's true.
Thanks everyone for submitting some audio clips and submitting your text responses. It's a great platform for us to work with and talking about our goals through the lens of your all goals. And I'm sure many of them are shared by many of our listeners. So let's keep in touch about how we're executing on those. And I'm sure those will be topics of conversation in the Definitively Discreet Dive Down Discord.
Even though we're probably not going to do dedicated goals episodes every month forever, even though Dave really wants to, I will say, though, I'm happy to do more advice-centric segments. If you send us stuff via podinbox.com/thedivedown or tweet us or email us, we will dedicate a little wind down to your questions, comments, and concerns.
100%. We do not ignore those things. We don't get a lot of them.
Yeah. And maybe we haven't earned the right to offer you advice yet, but I mean, how bad could the advice we offer really be? Yeah, seriously.
How bad can it be?
I'm out here telling you, if you bought the cards once, you can buy them again. Am I wrong? But that does wrap up this week's show. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted your questions, your feedback, your input for this episode. We did have a lot of patrons, but we did put it out there on Twitter. So if you feel like you would have participated and you sort of didn't know about it, consider following us on Twitter. And that way you can be up to date whenever we have these public callouts in the future. If this happens to be your first time listening to Dive Down, make sure you subscribe so you get the latest episodes as soon as they come out. And if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and review. If you'd like to submit a question, like I said, you can tweet us at the Dive Down, all one word. You can email thedivedown@gmail.com or leave an audio message at podinbox.com/thedivedown. Links to all of these are in show notes. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/thedivedown. You can also support us while playing Magic with Mana Traders, a Mana Traders rental account. Use promo code thedivedown2022 to get 15% off your first 2 months of renting Magic Online cards. Of course, thanks again to our newest sponsor, Barrister and Man. Use the coupon code DiveDown2022 to get 15% off your first order of a grooming product of your choice. I've been using the beard oil. Yeah, multiple products. I've been using beard oil and shaving soap, and I love it. Check out the lavender. A nice neutral smell.
Barrister and Man, M-A-N-N, two N's.
As always, special thanks to the bands Nowhere and Spaceblood for letting us use their music. And until next week, get out there and think good and play good in 2022.